What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.
Welcome to 2 hours of the Chill Out Tent. I'm Josh Briscoe. It's the Josh Briscoe Show here on 96.5 The Fan. Quentin Moore is pushing the buttons on the other side of the glass. Nick Price back there, too. He's just packing up, just trying to get out of here. We're going to have a good time talking about things related to the Kansas City Football Chiefs this evening. We had a game just last night. We've certainly heard plenty already about what we saw against the Buccaneers, and there's some interesting places about where this team could go, plus a genuinely surprising vibe turn amongst a lot of Chiefs fans at one particular position. They did not make a move today on the day of the trade deadline. Ultimately, they, of course, add DeAndre Hopkins. We will discuss him this evening. Don't you even stress about that. And Joshua Uche, who didn't have a huge workload, didn't make a huge impact last night. His onboarding process is still, well, you know, onboarding. And so I'm not worrying about him one bit just yet. But before we get to the move the Chiefs didn't make and why I think we're maybe having a little bit of the wrong conversation about the cornerback position, there you go. I've spilled the beans. The tease for later is we're going to talk about the corners. Wasn't a great day against Tampa Bay. I think it's a little strange where we've ended up. But there is no question about where we should be from the top of what we saw last night on Monday Night Football. There's been a lot of talk of the three-peat throughout this entire offseason and the season to this point. And suddenly we're talking about the AAR-peat? AAR three-peat? There's something in there with the elder statesman of the Chiefs offense being the guys who can carry it. Now, look, I'm optimistic long-term about Xavier Worthy, despite the fact that it's been a lot of ups and downs and probably a few more downs than ups to this point, although I guess yesterday we would have liked to see him get his feet down a little faster. I am impressed with how this team has weathered the injuries they have on the offensive side of the ball. Of course, Kareem Hunt being the returning elder statesman in this instance, taking the baton from Isaiah Pacheco out with the injury. The wide receiver injuries would have decimated a lesser team and a lesser quarterback and a lesser coach. All of that should be relatively evident. I think we know all of that. I give the Chiefs some credit and some wiggle room for the state of the wide receiver room at the midseason point because their number one and number two receivers were lost for essentially the year. Certainly you hope that Hollywood's back for the end of the season, maybe for the playoff run. But the offense the Chiefs were teeing up in training camp is extraordinarily different than the offense that we saw through these first 8 games of the season. Nothing is more impressive. You know what? Nothing's more impressive. Something is more shocking than what DeAndre Hopkins did. I was going to say nothing is more impressive and nothing is more shocking than what DeAndre Hopkins has done. That's not entirely true. The most shocking thing that happened last night, if you would have gone back to training camp and say, all right, Josh, I'm going to, I'm going to bring out the crystal ball, put it in front of you, look in, see the future, and tell me which of these two things is more likely. That in the first game of November, DeAndre Hopkins will haul in 2 touchdowns in his second game as a member of the Kansas City Chiefs, or Kareem Hunt returns to Arrowhead, scores a walk-off touchdown in overtime, and blows kisses to the fans. I would have said, oh, well, that's kind of alarming that they needed to trade for DeAndre Hopkins, but that's, you know, that has been a fit that makes a little bit of sense for a while now. I could see that happening. There's no shot Kareem Hunt is going to be on this team. And now here we are, largely, I think, because of the three-peat, but also largely because the Chiefs and Clark Hunt and Andy Reid and Brett Veach and the decision-makers throughout, they know the three-peat is history. Patrick Mahomes is a limited resource. I know we don't want to like think about the end of the Patrick Mahomes era. I think somewhere, though, in 40 or 50 years, he may need to retire. Hopefully not sooner. But you also have a limited resource in Travis Kelce at this point, the eldest statesman in this offense. I don't know if Travis Kelce is going to retire after this year. I don't know if it's going to just be one more season. But since Travis Kelce signed that reworked two-year contract this last offseason, I've been under the assumption that that's more or less, that's a soft guidance for Travis Kelce's retirement plan. There's a lot of instances and a lot of reasons that he could call it quits after a three-peat, depending on his health and, you know, his life seems pretty full and pretty good right now. Maybe he's absolutely dead set on finishing out that two-year commitment. Maybe he decides, hey, you know what? I have two more years of this. Rashee Rice is back, and I'm feeling good. In 2025, I'll keep stretching the career out. I don't know. But I do know that we're in the, not the back nine, the back three for Travis Kelce. And so it would have been irresponsible for the Chiefs, with all of the infrastructure, the best quarterback in football, the best tight end in the world, it would have been irresponsible for them to let this season come and go because they suffered some devastating injuries early in the season. Now, in light of today being the trade deadline, I think it's really, really important. I talked about this a ton last week. I think it's really, really important to note that the Chiefs did that in responsible ways that did not come at the expense of their future. It wasn't, oh, God, Rashee Rice went down. Whatever it takes for T. Higgins. Or frankly, whatever it takes for Davante Adams. They got DeAndre Hopkins for the same price the Pittsburgh Steelers just gave up for Mike Williams. I thought Mike Williams was probably going to end up getting cut. Now, for Hopkins, it could escalate to a fourth if he stays healthy and if the Chiefs go back to the Super Bowl. And I will say, with grand confidence, the Steelers would have thrown those clauses in too for Mike Williams. Hey, Pittsburgh, if Mike Williams plays the vast majority of your offensive snaps and you guys go to the Super Bowl, can you make that a fifth or fourth? I'm asking the Steelers to do that, even as one of the top teams in the AFC right now, probably would have felt foolish from the Jets. The point being, the Chiefs reloaded. They did it responsibly. They didn't overpay. They did not give up the house for Marshawn Lattimore today at corner. Again, we'll talk more corner later on. But now they have something that they certainly didn't plan on having this offseason. And it's veteran help for Travis Kelce. Instead of lightening the load on the 35-year-old's shoulders and bringing in second year of Rashee Rice and really running the offense, if not entirely through him, making him sort of the primary thing to lean on in the passing game. That was the plan. We saw it. Having Hollywood Brown take a little bit more attention away from Kelce, make his life a little bit easier. Younger guy, not as young as the rookie, of course, or any of the second-year guy, but younger than Kelce. There were lots of ways they tried to spread out that weight, and it all came out from underneath them for reasons that weren't the Chiefs' fault, either in execution or in planning. Just fell out from under him. So they make this responsible acquisition for DeAndre Hopkins. And in his second game back as a Chief, his second game as a Chief, he has a performance so good that today he tweeted out a picture of Patriots Randy Moss and Patriots Tom Brady embracing each other with just an ellipses as the caption. Eight catches for 86 yards is not always an impressive stat line. Two touchdowns can come and go in fluky ways. But I saw something in that game last night from DeAndre Hopkins that I've never seen from a Chiefs receiver receiving the football from Patrick Mahomes. Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, an incredible talent. An incredible wide receiver at the peak of his powers compared to where Hopkins is now. None of this is about Tyreek Hill. He is an unfathomable player. But Patrick Mahomes has never had a receiver like DeAndre Hopkins, which is understandable because as far as I can tell, there's probably one of those. There might be a couple of, you know, the big body X receivers who can be out there alone on an island, who will catch everything, can work on the short and in the intermediate. The biggest play of the game wasn't short or intermediate to DeAndre Hopkins. It was down the field. Patrick Mahomes was being enveloped by pass rushers and his own offensive line. I don't know how he got that throw off. If you see the screenshot of the moment the ball is leaving Mahomes' hands, it seems like a magic trick, as so much of what he does perpetually seems. Patrick Mahomes gets that football out of his hands. And it wasn't just like a tremendous job tracking the football from DeAndre Hopkins, although he's good at that too. Patrick Mahomes took that football, put it back in the box that it came in, and sat it in DeAndre Hopkins' hands, which just so happened to be surrounded by four Tampa Bay Buccaneers hands with two more chasing down behind him. If you are not made a believer in this experiment from that moment, you'll never believe anything.
So I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
So I just looked up Randy Moss's stats for his first year with Tom Brady and the Patriots, and he averaged 93.3 yards per game in that first year. Now, as you just brought up, yesterday we had an 86-yard game from DeAndre Hopkins. Do you think that that sort of production keeps up and we see about half a season worth of Randy Moss production from DeAndre Hopkins moving forward?
It's a ridiculous question that I cannot confidently answer. It's a ridiculous question. I had not looked at the stat lines of Randy Moss throughout that season, and it was the whole season, right? So they even had time. I don't remember when that trade went down, but I think they had some offseason, right?
Yeah,
he
played a full 16-game season.
If you would have told me without having seen the box score, like, so how reasonable is it to compare, to actually compare those two quarterback wide receiver acquisition pairings? I would have said, look, man, I'm over the moon about DeAndre Hopkins, but I think he's probably at a level right now that Randy Moss, not quite at the level that Randy Moss was in 2007, right? This was game two. It was game two. Why? I would say that if I had to give you like the presumed stat line, and maybe Juju coming back, there's an extra couple of targets here and there, but it's not like the Chiefs have so many receivers they can't figure out what to do with all the great ones. If you told me that DeAndre Hopkins averaged six catches for 75 yards a game from here on out, very much in that neighborhood, I wouldn't balk at it.
Well, and we know that Travis Kelce's not getting, 16 targets moving forward. So, like, maybe there's actually more. Maybe there's more receptions going to DeAndre Hopkins moving forward.
And Mahomes went to him on that final drive, and they just missed. I don't want to say they misread it. I think Mahomes knew what he saw, and Hopkins did not do exactly what Mahomes expected there. That was their only missed connection. But you're right. 16 targets and freaking 14 catches for Travis Kelce is nonsense. There's plenty of ball to go around there. I thought I was optimistic about DeAndre Hopkins, the moment of the trade. I thought I was being optimistic from that point forward. And then I thought I was being optimistic after seeing the first game. Now after this one, I am wondering if my optimism has any bounds whatsoever because of that point. Because you know what? Comparing him, a guy who, by the way, the best quarterback he played with was when Deshaun Watson was good and Kyler Murray. I'll have to pull it up for next segment. Some hilarious quarterbacks that he caught touchdown passes from and went to Pro Bowls with them as his quarterback. They did not accompany him. I don't believe TJ Yates ever finished that run. But the other amazing thing about that question and the Moss comparison and everything else that it encapsulates, the Chiefs have two legitimate, cannot ignore, cannot overlook zone killers, man beaters when necessary. Hopkins, you know, is still able to do that because of his size and the way he runs his routes, and Kelce route running based as well. They have two legitimate options in the passing game for the greatest quarterback of all time to work with, while this running back continues to defy age and gravity and reason and gets close to these 30 carry games where he goes over 100 and then walks it off at the end. It's an amazing thing. And it just so happens that the two pass catchers leading this team are 67 years old combined. 32 and 35. Math is hard. 67 years of life between the two guys that combined for 22 catches, 186 yards, and 2 touchdowns, leading the Chiefs last night, catching the football from Patrick Mahomes. It's a hilarious time to be a Chiefs fan. It's a hilarious time to talk about this team. We'll continue doing it as we roll on the Josh Briscoe Show here on 96.5 The Fan. Welcome to the DeAndre Hopkins Show featuring Josh Briscoe. I'm Josh Briscoe. It's not called the DeAndre Hopkins Show. That is not legally binding. That is a joke. I am Josh Briscoe, though. Quentin Morris on the other side of the glass. I'll get to the cornerback thing in a little bit. Plus, Tucker D. Franklin will join us at 8 o'clock tonight to talk about a whole bunch of Chiefs things and a special experience that he had recently. He's the president of Power Rankings for a reason. We will power rank, or at least he will power rank something. I've prepared no power rankings of my own tonight. I know that's alarming for those of you who may be familiar with Tucker's work, but he will power rank some things, and we will maybe we'll figure out a Chiefs-based power ranking. We'll figure out, but Tucker will join us at 8. In the meantime, somebody had written a story here about, you know, Mahomes throwing his first touchdown to Hopkins, and a few of the quarterbacks who have thrown touchdown passes to him. So Mahomes is now the 14th quarterback to throw a touchdown to DeAndre Hopkins. Some of them, you know, you've seen in recent Titans history. The overall list, though, dating back to the Texans days, is absolutely jarring. The high water mark for Hopkins has been, again, good Deshaun Watson and Kyler Murray. Could I interest you in Brandon Whedon, Tom Savage, Brock Osweiler, or TJ Yates?
Aren't half those guys on the endless Cleveland Browns quarterback jersey?
They 100%. The 45 names on the back of one, I think, original maybe Tim Couch jersey, something. There are a lot of failed Browns quarterbacks there. The first year that DeAndre Hopkins went to the Pro Bowl, his quarterbacks were Brian Hoyer, TJ Yates, Brandon Whedon, and Ryan Mallett. That was in 2015. He went to a Pro Bowl. He went to the Pro Bowl again in 2017. That was, you know, obviously the draft class that included Deshaun Watson. So he was in there for 6 of those games alongside TJ Yates and Tom Savage. Taylor Heinicke was on that team. Who knew? He only threw 1 pass, 10-yard completion. I love Pro Football Reference. It very rarely fails you if you have an interest in simply remembering some guys. The two players who threw passes for the 2018 Houston Texans were Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins, 0 for 1.
What a rabbit hole you can go down just by going through, especially if you're into baseball. You know, you get the baseball side of it. Woo! You can spend, I spent a lot of hours going down that rabbit hole. I'm not going to lie.
It's an incredible free resource. Shout out to the reference family of sites. When did Chris Streveler throw 16 passes for the Arizona Cardinals?
That's a fake name.
It seems like what? He didn't start any. Was that a trick shot guy? Was that a little Taysom Hill action? Anyway, none of that is important, but it is distracting to that point. It makes a lot of sense. If you saw Hopkins talk after the game on the field, it makes a lot of sense. And our collective friend Nate Taylor just made this point on Only Weird Games a few hours ago. It makes sense that DeAndre Hopkins, in that environment, Nate compared the current Arrowhead atmosphere to, like, and this may go over poorly for some people for reasons that will become immediately obvious, but it started to gain a little bit of that 90s, early 2000s Yankee Stadium kind of feelings, where this was Nate's take, and I think it's a good one, where the import of the games that are played there starts to seep into the concrete, not concrete cancer, totally different thing. But you begin to, Arrowhead's always been loud and great, right? There's never been a moment in our collective lives, I guess maybe a couple of moments when it wasn't as loud or as great. But by and large, even in the doldrum days, Arrowhead Stadium always been loud, great place to watch a football game, and iconic in its way. But they've hosted the AFC Championship game, it feels like, every year, obviously, not last year. But you host all those AFC Championship games. Patrick Mahomes is the quarterback who plays there. Travis Kelce is the tight end who plays there. You had your Tyreek Hill moments, but then they trade him away and they continue ticking. When Joshua Uche comes to town, he talks about, like, Steve Spagnuolo as a legend of NFL defenses. And he's right. That's the guy that got coached by Bill Belichick. DeAndre Hopkins I mean, there are heights he hasn't reached. Here's another crazy thing I saw on Football Reference earlier today. DeAndre Hopkins, not a wide receiver stat, but DeAndre Hopkins has a losing record as a football player. Isn't that messed up? That doesn't feel right. One of the definitive receivers of this generation, one of the most fun players, one of the most iconic, recognizable wide receivers who doesn't make mistakes. He doesn't drop passes. He's not a knucklehead. There's nothing you can take away from DeAndre Hopkins. He's overachieved his own physical skill set. I can't remember the exact number now, but he was 10 games under 500 when he got to Kansas City. He's still under 500 now. That is an unbelievable generational player who's played a lot of losing football. And so when you get him, even Monday night against the Buccaneers, good enough for me. You get him in Arrowhead catching two touchdowns and breathing a new life into what this offense has been struggling around. I don't want to say they've been swirling the drain because that's overstating it. They've been pretty good and very effective and very efficient. It's been turnovers in the red zone. We've talked about this ad nauseum. But it is an offense that hadn't quite found its footing and hadn't quite found the guy who's not Travis Kelce. Hopkins steps in, immediately solves that problem, is overcome by the emotion in those post-game moments. And he's tweeting about Tom Brady and Randy Moss the next morning. There should be no surprise as to how he got there. He's one of the best receivers of this generation, and he has a losing record. All of a sudden, he has by far the best quarterback he's ever played with. He has by far the best surrounding circumstance, offensive coach, championship aspirations he's ever seen. And it all comes together in this perfect synchronicity of a team that desperately needed him to be more than he had been for a while. Not that he'd, you know, fallen off in Tennessee. He's been pretty forgettable there. He said when he got here, his introductory press conference, see, he hadn't played meaningful football, is the exact words, meaningful football in quite a while. And then he gauged it back to when the Cardinals, I think, started 8-0. And they felt like that was meaningful football. And then the fact that they didn't go 9-0 makes me think that that's where the fall off began. This is a totally different animal for him, and it's a totally different animal for Mahomes and for this offense. Here's the one other thing on Hopkins, and then we'll take a break and pivot to the corners. When we've talked about fits for Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid in this offense, 5'10", 4'4", 40, hopefully a little thicker than you'd think, but really it's shorter guys with speed. And I understand why Andy Reid can scheme you open with speed. The route combinations can begin to put stress defenders in these stress positions, and you just fast your way into space. Not starve yourself, just speed. You get enough of those guys, you can do a ton of things, and speed does kill. Like, that is not overstated. It doesn't only apply to what speed do in baseball. You give me a choice of any one trait in the NFL, I can't know anything else for a player, I'll probably go ahead and start with elite speed and then hope the rest of it comes together. It's an overwhelming trait. It's why I'm bullish on Xavier Worthy. It's why I wasn't surprised when they drafted Xavier Worthy. He checks those boxes. But I think somewhere in there, all of us overthought it a little bit, myself included. Andy Reid, when they acquired Hopkins, I thought had a very good line when he said that he's seen so much football, he's played so much football, he's learning a new dialect more than he's learning a new language. We frequently talk about, you know, Juju coming back, he knows the language. Could they have tried to trade for DeMarcus Robinson? He'd know the language. Obviously, that didn't happen. Mecole Hardman comes back midseason, he knows the offense, he knows the language. The awesome thing for me yesterday was watching Mahomes and Hopkins get on that same page together, become such integral pairings for making this offense spin. He was third in receiving snaps, by the way, behind Watson and Worthy. That will continue to grow. His chemistry with Mahomes will continue to grow. I thought this would work when they made the trade. I really did. I thought it would be a clear net positive and would probably be a real positive. And even now I'm thinking, man, we really should have thought this more freely and maybe had this conversation years prior. Get Patrick Mahomes a professional wide receiver with a special skill set in a few different places who knows what he's looking at. I got a professional wide receiver. Mahomes isn't gun shy on trust. He's just had guys burn him in that regard. Xavier Worthy hasn't really earned Patrick Mahomes' trust at this point, unfortunately. They need to continue working on it. Hopkins showed up, was DeAndre bleeping Hopkins, and earned Patrick Mahomes' trust just that easily. It's a great sign for things to come, but if all he does is put up 8 for 80 and 2 touchdowns, if yesterday was the high watermark for DeAndre Hopkins, I'll take that too. The offense is in a much better place than I thought it would be just 2 weeks into this experiment. I'm deeply excited about the specific Hopkins-Kelsey duo. If Hollywood does come back for the playoff run, you do expect Juju back sometime soon. You do expect Isaiah Pacheco back late November, early December. It's kind of fun for the first time this season, even though they're 8-0, undefeated, top of the league. It's kind of fun to look ahead regarding the Chiefs offense and to be excited about what's still to come, as opposed to looking back and just being bummed by the losses. Also, when your quarterback is Patrick Mahomes, you should never really be that bummed.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, you complainers. Let's talk about what the Chiefs didn't do today. God. It's the Josh Briscoe Show. I'm sorry for calling you names. You know who would never call you names? Quentin Morris on the other side of the glass. Trade deadline comes and goes today, and the Chiefs do not trade for Marshawn Lattimore. Do they even want to win? This is the question that was being asked throughout my mentions. It was very confusing. At JB Briscoe, by the way, on Twitter and all social media platforms, just because I don't know about Twitter. It's been rough for a little bit. We'll see where it goes. At JB Briscoe, no E, by the way, on Briscoe, if you're looking for me. Just ends with the O. That's it. No E. Don't ever make that mistake, or I will call my people. It's just me. So the New Orleans Saints did trade away Marshawn Lattimore, and there was a lot of reporting around that throughout the last couple of days, and some reporting that the Chiefs were interested. I believe the Chiefs were interested. I think I said this to Carrington last week in particular. I don't believe the Chiefs were ever interested at the cost of a day two draft pick, which would be second round or third round. Maybe you could talk yourself into, oh, we're going to have probably the last pick of the third round, so that third round pick, we'll have the Titans pick. Never made sense for me for the Chiefs to give up the pick they received in trading L'Jarius Sneed to go get another cornerback. Marshawn Lattimore is older than L'Jarius Sneed, and L'Jarius Sneed was perfect in this defense. Lattimore has a little flexibility in his contract. Obviously, Sneed got paid right away. But comparing those two, for me, is just like about, it's about investment in the position outside of Trent McDuffie. Didn't think it made sense. I'm sure the Chiefs called and said, hey, if the best you're hearing is maybe even at a fourth, we could part ways with a fourth to have him the rest of the season, tinker that contract a little bit and figure it out. But the price got too high too fast, and ultimately, the Saints sent Lattimore and a fifth the Washington Commanders in exchange for a third, fourth, and sixth in next year's draft. The Chiefs were never going to pay that price. They should never have paid that price. The reporting at the time, I thought, was starting to give the game away a little bit, where before the deal was done, and while it was also very open, Adam Schefter says the Chiefs have been linked to Lattimore. Ian Rappaport says the Chiefs have been in it. They're going past tense in the moment, right? The Saints are hoping to get the bidding back up, get some other teams involved, say, hey, you know, the Commanders are the favorite, but the Chiefs, those champions have been sniffing around. And maybe your team, maybe you, Baltimore, do you want to give us a call? Cincy, your defense is terrible. Would you like Marshawn Lattimore? Give us a call and we'll talk about it. If you don't, maybe the Chiefs will get him. That always felt relatively transparent to me once the price became evidently too high for the Chiefs to meet. And I think they made the right decision by not doing that. And the way that I've talked about Hopkins and Uche being reasonable costs to give up for players who you think you can get a real championship push out of, Didn't make sense for me with Lattimore. Here's the thing that's confusing. There have been a number of people on social media who have responded to that general line of thinking with great vitriol and concern. See, if they stay with the in-house options, this season is sabotaged. It's a verbatim word choice that I'm pulling from Twitter. Tampa's garbage wide receivers torched the Chiefs last night. Can I help you all with something just to maybe ease your nerves about football? Cade Otton was a menace, 8 for 77. Next leading receiver for the Bucs and the leading wide receiver, Sterling Shepard, 4 for 48. Their entire wide receiving core was somewhere in the 80, under 90 yards, I think, on the day. Should have done that math before the show. You know how I do with math.
Didn't it take until the very last drive to get over two catches for the wide receivers?
That would make a lot of sense. I don't know that, but I would believe you if that's what you thought you heard. Baker Mayfield ended with 200 passing yards, even on the dot. A lot of those schemed open plays, too, were schemed open. Liam Cohen had a very good day, which meant Steve Spagnuolo did not have as good of a day as usual. Not really concerned about that in the long term, but you can acknowledge it for one game. Guys got open. There were some good matchups. And yes, it's true. Late in the game, Baker was looking for Chris Roland Wallace and Joshua Williams because throwing at Trent McDuffie is a fool's errand. We all know this already. Here's what I want to say about the corners, okay? If staying with this group they have now is the same group of guys they had coming into this year minus Jalen Watson. I don't think they expected Jalen Watson to start. Like, he certainly wasn't, let's say this, he was not an incumbent in the space of L'Jarius Sneed. He had off-season shoulder surgery. He barely participated in training camp. He had to go to the yellow jersey to kind of ramp up to contact. He was out there in the third preseason game into the fourth quarter and was getting beaten. Now, he was knocking off the rust. We know this now. But after that, Watson settled in as this team's clear number two corner and played like a high-end number two outside corner. A great start to the season. Horrible that he had that injury. And he seemed to contend on Twitter today that maybe he's still eyeing a return for the playoffs. That would be a blessing. But I think there's some panic around the Chiefs' corners right now that is not earned. They traded Sneed away and prepared to just weather this storm with the numbers they threw at it. Now Watson was the winner of that group, and you lost the winner of that group. Again, that's bad. It is a weakness. It's where quarterbacks should be looking at. One of Jalen Watson's biggest advantages through this season was that he was not a weakness that quarterbacks could target opposite McDuffie. Chris Roland Wallace has played a nice 69 defensive snaps of NFL football. Nazi Johnson, who obviously didn't play last night because of the concussion, he's played very, very, very little since tearing his ACL. Didn't play at all last year. He's played a little bit this year, kind of ramping up. Joshua Williams was playing. He played in week one a decent amount, week two a tiny bit. He did not play from week three until the injury started. Now he's ramping back up. He played 100% of the snaps yesterday. I think by and large, you just let this one play out, noting that Lattimore was the only real, like, huge upgrade available. If there was a guy they thought they could get and plug in as a veteran kind of floor setter for a sixth, I would have been totally fine with having that conversation. Here's the thing I'm surprised I haven't heard more of. Somebody responded to one of those tweets of mine and said, apart from all of this, I'll go ahead and thank you, Bonk Humphrey, for the tweet. I have full faith that Spagnuolo and Merritt will have the unit playing well. If there's any position they've been solid at finding guys and helping them succeed, it's corner. That's the part of this I'm surprised I haven't heard more of. Leaning on the idea that all the coaches will, they'll develop the in-house guys. Don't worry about it. Coaches will make these okay players great players. That's usually a bad strategy that ultimately bites you. Over-trusting your own talent, over-trusting your own coaching, that is usually a bad strategy. It's not usually Steve Spagnuolo and Dave Merritt developing a cornerback. That's earned. They've done it over and over and over. We have seen it over and over and over. Steve Spagnuolo said last week, certainly true for Joshua Williams, and then he said it's probably true for everybody on the roster, they play better when they get those starter reps in practice that week. Nazi Johnson was the starter for 18 snaps before his concussion. Nazi Johnson had played in 7 games the last 2 years. Chris Roland Wallace is a rookie who hasn't played 70 snaps yet. Now, again, you can absolutely be worried about Joshua Williams as CB2. Johnson should be back. Hopefully he and Najee Johnson was not playing exceptional football. It was a real loss to lose Jalen Watson. But I think talking about the cornerback group in a similar way to the way we were talking about the wide receivers was a mistake. I think we should talk about it the way we were talking about the defensive line. Joshua Uche becomes available for a future sixth, right? He becomes open and available for that price tag. Bring him in, spruce up the group, and see if he can give you a little extra pass rush juice, which, by the way, will make the corners' lives easier later in the season. The Chiefs didn't get a deal at corner. There was not one available, to my best understanding. And so, on Watson, it was around his 40th NFL game when it was like, oh, that's a number two corner. That's a legit number two corner back there with significant NFL experience now. I generally, this might put me on opposition of other people here, I generally kind of cringe at the in vitro we trust mindset taking over everything. On some level, it's certainly he's earned it, and if you've got it on a t-shirt or whatever, that's fine. But when your response to serious critique is, well, it's Brett Veach, he'll figure it out. Brett Veach can make mistakes too. He has made mistakes too. Bad uses of draft picks, leaning on players, believing in wide receivers that never developed into number one or number two receivers. Again, this isn't really about Veach. Brett Veach has earned a ton of trust, but I don't like, that man is flawless. We will follow him to the ends of the earth and everything he says will be fine forever. That's how you eventually end up with a roster with holes in it because even the person in question doesn't know how to recalibrate to their own mistakes. Again, that's not Brett Veach. Brett Veach is in an incredible spot right now. He has earned a ton of your trust. But I think it's bizarre that Veach, Spags, and Merritt, a triumvirate there who has proven time and time again that they do deserve the trust in that process, that they are now not getting it after a day that Sterling Shepard went 4 for 48. That game is different with better receivers. It was not a good day for Joshua Williams. It was not a good day for Chris Rowan Wallace. It really wasn't a good day for Nick Bolton. It wasn't a good day for the linebackers by and large. It wasn't a great day for the safeties. They ended up kind of bouncing back a little bit. But I just have found it strange. There's been such a hyper-focus on Joshua Williams in the cornerback room. It's going to get Najee Johnson back. And then you say, hey, you're going to have to do this on the fly a little bit. There will be growing pains. But if you told me that Chris Rowland Wallace was going to have a pick six in the Super Bowl in a few months, I would not look at you crazy. It's like, ah, that kind of fits this bonkers trend that this defense and these coaches have been able to pull off. So the trade deadline has come and gone. Marshawn Lattimore's in Washington, not Kansas City. I think that's for the best for the Chiefs' future in the long term. It will be a thing to watch. It may cost them points. It almost certainly will cost them points. It may cost them games at some point to say, oh man, Jalen Watson's probably in the right spot and Joshua Williams wasn't. That's an issue. And the Chiefs need to figure out if they can trust Joshua Williams in zone, which so far has been an issue. I just don't think it's quite the mission critical, urgent failure kind of thing that a lot of people have latched onto. So I'm offering a little bit of patience at the cornerback position because I think if anybody has earned that kind of faith, it's the guys in charge of that spot. We'll take a timeout, come back, chat a little more. At 8 o'clock, Tucker D. Franklin will join us. We'll talk about all sorts of Chiefs things. I'll see if he thinks I'm crazy at receiver, corner, or anything else. Plus, I'm going to let the president of Power Rankings do a little bit of Power Rankings. That'll be up at 8 o'clock here on the Josh Briscoe Show on 96.5 The Fan. It's the Josh Briscoe Show on 96.5 The Fan. A few minutes away from talking ball with Tucker D. Franklin. I've mentioned one player's name a few times that we haven't really talked about a lot. And I just told you that I think the cornerback panic is a little bit overdone right now and how excited I am about wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins and panic and wide receiver and panic and wide receiver. What is it? Panic and wide receiver. I'm not panicking about Xavier Worthy, okay? I think it's far too soon for that. But it could be going better. Now, I think if Mahomes hits him on that deep shot down the field from a couple of weeks ago, the vibes are very different there. But the first drive yesterday, last night, you get Xavier Worthy absolutely alone, drifting toward the sideline, and it looked like a walk-in touchdown. and then the play ends short of the goal line, and you go, oh man, well, that was like a walk up to the one sort of reception. And then you see the replay, and as he spins to catch the ball, of course, he steps out of bounds. The running plays didn't work, and that route was obviously a mess. The big loss on that next drive stalled the drive out entirely. The inverse of what I just said about DeAndre Hopkins a little bit ago, he makes everything seem easier. He's a veteran that Mahomes is clearly comfortable relying on just two games into that relationship now. It feels like that chemistry is there and building very, very quickly. I can't say any of that about Xavier Worthy at this point. I don't even know if it's concerning. But it is a bummer, right? I still think he's, at least when Juju's still out, he's probably the second most important receiver to have on the field, or at least the second most threatening for opposing defenses. You'd rather see Justin Watson or Mecole Hardman on the field opposite DeAndre Hopkins than you would Xavier Worthy, because you know Worthy has one dominant burner trait. But it sure would be nice to see that connection land. And to see the building blocks of better chemistry there. Because, you know, I guess Mahomes could have scooted that ball to the right just a little bit. But the only defender around Worthy on that play was the sideline, and he stepped right on it. For me, it's a little bit, it's the bummer that comes with realizing that the rookie project is still a rookie project. That the accelerated course isn't quite there like it was for Rashee Rice last year. Maybe around the same time, Worthy could have a different role, maybe a more limited role that is more productive going forward. And I still think we're going to see him have another long touchdown. I think we're going to continue to see him be a part of the offense. And I think that still needs to be the plan, because by January, I don't think we're going to be having the same conversation, or at least I don't think we are going to be having it on a mandatory level. 2 months from today, we're going to be either right before or right after the last game of the regular season. 2 months from today, I want Xavier Worthy to be a more confident part of this offense. However, the Chiefs need to adjust to that. It would just be nice if there had been a tiny bit more production up to this point. If a few of those connections were made, if it felt like the chemistry was a little bit more there. Again, he's a rookie. It's very, very different than onboarding one of the best receivers of this era. But I'm acknowledging the disappointment. I'm acknowledging that it's a little bit of a bummer. And I'm acknowledging that there's a lot of ways to go still. And that last part can be encouraging. I am in no way out on Xavier Worthy. I just think it's okay to admit that it hasn't been as fun as we've hoped. We'll take a break. It's the Josh Briscoe Show on 96.5 The Fan. I think I was a second late on my clock there, but... Hour two of the Josh Briscoe Show here on 96.5 The Fan. Quentin Moore is producing the effort, picking the music, and helping me use the phones that I have not yet mastered. And by mastered, I mean figured out even a little bit. I touched a button on the phone, and I hung up on our next guest, Tucker D. Franklin. The D stands for definitely online now that Quentin has put him on the phones. And you can see him across KC Sports Network, Mizzou That's Who, that football show with Matt Verderam, who we had on a few weeks ago, and very likely enjoying an ice cold beer at an establishment near you. Tucker, how you doing? Well, maybe not. I may have this. There's every chance that I just simply have not learned how to use any of these buttons. Something changed over here now, but I don't know. Quentin, you push all the buttons and pull all the levers you need to and let me know when Tucker's there. I apologize for being as completely inept as I am at the moment. I've never felt so helpless just trying to hit a phone button. The look on Quentin's face has made me think that I've broke something. Tucker, if you could hear me, just know he has left the room. I can start hitting buttons over here. Oh, Tucker says he is still connected. Do you want me to hang up on this? I can hang up on him, or I can try that, or that, or that. It's a little like do not cross sort of sign. Maybe it's the wrong phones. That's where I've left us now. My deepest apologies to Quentin in particular, to Tucker a little bit. And if you're a listener right now enjoying this, I have to imagine this is pretty much the show that you'd like it to be. We'll go through a variety of things here with Tucker as we've gone through the DeAndre Hopkins game, the elder statesman carrying the offense, the confusing state of the cornerback discourse, and everything that follows. I'll also mention, this is a failing on my part, we just never talk about actual quarterback Patrick Mahomes enough. He's such an idea and such an overwhelming concept at this point that it's easy to overlook things like this, tweeted out by Sheil Kapadia. Patrick Mahomes on third down, 11 for 13 for 126 yards and 10 first downs. The highest success rate on third or fourth downs this season, Patrick Mahomes. Highest EPA per play on third and fourth downs, Patrick Mahomes. There is a borderline mystical status establishing for Mahomes at this point. And it's very hard to encapsulate, air quotes here, clutch. It's just something that great players do when the games are the most important. It's a very hard thing to predict. It's a very hard thing to understand. We don't really have the numbers or the science for it. We have high leverage moments. But why are some players better in those circumstances than others? For Mahomes, I just think he is better all the time. And then these are times when he has to put on the cape. It is harder to live that way 24/7. Like, I know that, you know, you on one hand, you think about 17 regular season games. Can you treat all of them like the Super Bowl and just go ahead and get your intensity and effort levels all the way up for every one of these contests? It's hard to do, though. Can you just play your best football every single down? Not really. Defenses are also doing their best. You're saving, not necessarily saving your best plays, but you are implementing your break glass in case of emergency efforts on these must-have third downs, late in games, overtime drives. It is an unbelievable constant, though. When moments are just moments, games are just games, plays are just plays. It is truly unfathomable that Patrick Mahomes is so consistently at his best when those moments are the biggest. We may have a... I can't hear my own microphone now. Oh, there we go. I'm hearing it again. Okay. Listen, I'm sorry. I'm still jumpy. It's still a relatively new studio. Do we have Tucker D. Franklin? Tucker, do you hear me? No! I can hit more buttons on my end, but still not. Still not Tucker ready yet. Sorry, Tucker. Well, here's my thinking right now. We're going to have to take time out in a few minutes anyway. Maybe take a little early time out, which I so rarely do. Take a little early break, and we'll see if we can reconvene with Tucker here in a second. Because I wanted to spend a little more time with him anyway, and I figured our next segment would probably only be like 6 minutes. And look at that. We've just done six beautiful minutes and we're talking about Patrick Mahomes on third downs.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. Beginning, middle, or end of the year, it's always a great time to take control of your financial life. And the Jill on Money podcast is here to help. Your questions make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and, more importantly, on your life. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.
I think we're good this time for real. Tucker, before I introduce you again, can you hear me?
I hear you, Josh.
Yes!
Can you hear me?
That,
we did it.
That is the voice of Tucker D. Franklin. The D stands for definitely can hear him now. You can see him across KC Sports Network, hear him and watch him on Mizzou That's Who and That Football Show with Matt Verderam. Follow him on social media at Tucker D. Franklin or on TikTok at Pikachu Mixtape. Tucker, it's so good to hear your voice for the second or third time today.
Yeah, that's true. It is very good to be on the airwaves again with you, Josh, and to talk some Chiefs football. I'm very excited. I'm glad that we are able to finally get connected and be able to talk some Chiefs.
I was just telling Quentin, who is this is Quentin and I's first show working together here. So I was telling him during the break, as he's scrambling around trying to figure out what's going on with the phones, I feel completely useless because I haven't seen exactly these phones before, but I'm familiar with the concept. And I'm going to go ahead and air a little bit of laundry, Quentin. I hope nothing that will get you in trouble. Certainly Quentin's been masterful, but he said, just tell Tucker, we're sorry. And I really apologize for all that. I said, oh, it's okay. Tucker was an intern of mine way back in the day. We're familiar with how the radio machine, occasionally a part just falls off. Maybe it's user error. Maybe it's a bolt from 1982. Like, there's no way to know, but it's all part of the charm. And I'm excited to get to, as you said, share these airwaves again. It's also a fun and exciting time, which you wouldn't know if you only watch people on Chiefs Twitter talk about cornerbacks. You would think we were in a horrible, horrible place again.
That's very Chiefs Twitter chamber. Think that this team is 2-6 and they're never winning a game ever again, and the quarterback is playing awful and the defense is probably allowing 38 points a game or something like that. But no, none of that has happened. The Chiefs are perfect so far this season. Well, the games haven't been perfect, but the record is of that. And look, they've made some good moves. I do think it is a good time right now. The trade deadline does come to a close. I think it's a good time for reflection on where the Chiefs have been so far in the first 8 games of the season.
I don't want to alarm you or anybody else, but if you're doing your like phone setup thingy and just want to go to the simplest form of it, your connection now is just a smidge touchy, and I feel like that is perfect given the way that we introduced this. Oh man, I mean, just virtually nothing on that one. Do I have you here? Have we smoothed out? Maybe. Oh no.
How that works or anything.
None of it worked.
It's devastating, truthfully.
It really is. Do you have I don't know. I mean, I just sort of want to hang out and see if it solidifies, because I really like the idea of using this as a point of reflection for this Chiefs team, but I'm so afraid to be like, hey, Tucker, so how do you reflect on this season? Only for you to do a beautiful 3-minute soliloquy that nobody gets to hear.
Yeah, well, that wouldn't be very out of the norm, I think. I think I talked for 3 minutes all the time that nobody hears. So yeah,
it's actually worse when it's like every third or fourth word that you lose, and it's like, oh man, well, I could tell that there was something beautiful happening in there, but we couldn't quite land that particular plane. I don't know if you've got like a little Wi-Fi calling thing you want to toggle on or off, and maybe this wasn't meant to be, and maybe the phone gods have just tried to stop us on a few different occasions. But I'll give you one lob at exactly that. When you do have kind of the 30,000 foot view, you have an undefeated team that has figured out some of their offensive issues by adding, you know, a likely future Hall of Famer, that you have a defense that's played great football and then had an imperfect game against Baker Mayfield's beat up Bucks. Where do you stand? Where do you think is a reasonable place to be right here as we begin week 10?
You know, I do think that it is probably good to recognize this team does have some flaws. Also recognize the fact that they have the greatest flaw eraser of all time in Patrick Mahomes, and the way that he is able to negate both offensive and defensive flaws as a position on the offense is actually quite incredible, of how he's able to do that and just ride the ship and win games and be able to win games even when he doesn't play great. That's the other thing too, is that he hasn't played entirely great. I do think this game best game of the season, and he was able to right some wrongs that the defense had, and very rarely had this season. He was able to go out there, perform well, and the offense was really able to show that they have that next game, show that they can pick it up when it mattered. We've seen the Chiefs defense pick that up, right? We've seen that thing on the Chiefs defensive side of things, that they've been able to answer the call, answer the bell of whatever happens, not being able to get things going, the defense will pick it up and they'll keep it going for the team. Now, because of the struggles on Monday, the offense had to pick it up. The offense had to pick up the bell, had to answer the call. They did. I mean, shouldn't be a huge shock, right, with Patrick Mahomes as your quarterback. But I do think it's one of those things, too, where the Chiefs can have these flaws. All these other teams can have these flaws. But because they have Patrick Mahomes, he negates so many different flaws that you can have on the offensive side of the ball and really on the defensive side of the ball, because no matter what position he gets put in, he seems to play better when his back is against the wall and when he's hurt, which is odd in its own right. But, like, it's one of those things where he just kind of makes things better. It's weird to be in that spot, Josh, yeah. where you're just like, oh, yeah, no, it's okay because, like, Patrick Mahomes. And there's been times already this season where we've been in games and we've been watching these games and we're like, oh, man, I just don't know how the Chiefs can pull this out. And then they make the crucial plays when they – and I think that's what really the big difference has been, is they just make plays when they matter. When they get opportunities, they take advantage of them. Not every team does that, and that's a big part because of Patrick Mahomes. Also goes back to the coaching staff, Andy Reid. I thought it was very interesting. DeAndre Hopkins was very, 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 very appreciative and praiseworthy of the coaching staff, even in the position coaches, getting him to go, Matt Nagy as well. Like, I thought that was incredibly interesting of how complimentary he was to the coaching staff leading into this. And it just kind of shows you that, like, the situations that DeAndre Hopkins has been in are also just been terrible. Maybe not the various coaching staffs, but I think that that's really the big thing, is that when I step back and I look, like, Patrick Mahomes hasn't played great, but he still played great when it mattered.
The thing about that with the great eraser that Patrick Mahomes can be of the flaws or the weaknesses or the missed marks throughout, on some level, I was thinking about that even in connection with DeAndre Hopkins, thinking about how easy that relationship has looked and how easily it seems like it came along. We're at this point now, after all of this conversation about, you know, onboarding processes and learning the offense and all of that, when you give Patrick Mahomes, a great wide receiver who has played 12 years in the league and has a feel for what defenses are doing, it makes a lot of sense that Mahomes can meet him there. Patrick Mahomes is just trying to meet Sky Moore at his level for the last couple of years. He was trying to meet Kadarius Toney at that level. The balls that ended up being intercepted off the hands of Kadarius Toney, sorry to dig this one up, everybody, but those were put in the right spot. The question is then, can the players make those plays? Maybe, I don't even know if you heard as we were kind of shuffling phone stuff last segment, but the third down stats from Shiel Kapadia and that entire idea of, okay, so Mahomes is clutch. What does that mean? The Chiefs are great when it matters most. How does that happen? And I think what it ends up being, by and large, I mean, it's a part of it. I think it's multifaceted and one of the most fascinating mysteries we'll never fully solve around sports, which is why do some people get better under stress or worse under stress? Feels easier to wrap your head around. But when you have an elite, nearly perfect quarterback leading your offense and leading the charge and deciding where to go with the football and deciding who to look for and who to extend that trust to, when he goes to those guys in big moments, it makes sense that it works. I mean, we've seen Mahomes be let down in a air quotes clutch circumstance by a Marquez Valdez-Scantling drop. When Mahomes gets let down in a clutch moment because Kadarius Toney is lined up offsides, he almost kills a referee. Like, we were all nervous for that man's health in that moment. The idea of, like, I don't know, maybe shortening the rotation a little bit for a cross-sport term, maybe that's part of it as well. But the Chiefs still now, I want to ask you about Xavier Worthy, they're still now in this exploratory process where there is still room to grow. Xavier Worthy will not be the same player on November 5th that he is on January 5th, or at least we certainly hope so. I want to know where your level of optimism and where your level of concern is now, as clearly Hopkins is the number one receiver on this team. You expect Juju Smith-Schuster back within the next few weeks, hopefully. Where does Xavier Worthy fit in, and how do you feel about him as somebody who, you know, certainly talked about him and throughout the pre-draft process, and now nine weeks, eight games into his Chiefs career. Where are you at on the rookie?
Here so far this year has not gone as the Chiefs might have anticipated it to, right? So this plan going into this year has not unfolded like the Chiefs probably anticipated his development plan to. I think that is probably does play into a little bit. Look, I do think it's just a It was disappointing for him to see from Xavier Worthy how he just kind of forgot how to play football. Like, he forgot to stay in bounds and on a couple of catches. I think the one catch he had was logged as a run. He did
I apologize deeply, but much like Xavier Worthy's rookie season, we have hit some rocky territory at about the halfway point, and we may need to take this one back to the practice field. Your first answer came through pretty loud and clear. I like to think that people saw what you put on tape in that first answer. You say that Tucker D. Franklin, that's a guy that I'm willing to have move up my draft board, even if somewhere in the phone ghost in the machine process, if we have lost our way. That sometimes great segments get derailed by bad phone lines. That happens.
Look, that's what it is.
I will, let's do this. Next time we do 21 questions together, I'd really like to get your Taylor Swift power rankings of your top five moments going to see the Eras Tour in Indianapolis. I am heartbroken that we will not have time or the ability to get to that right now. I desperately need to know about those, and I don't know, maybe we tweet them out or any other better social media platform in the days or weeks to come.
Well, I appreciate your hospitality, Josh. I'm sorry I soiled myself in your hospitality.
The good news is the cleanest bit of audio was that one. So at least, with any luck, we can have that turned into some sort of liner or something for next week. And ideally for next time, when we can test these waters and try to reconnect again. Thank you, Tucker, for at bare minimum giving us an activity to solve for these first 20 minutes of the 8 o'clock hour.
Thank you.
Have a good night. I don't feel so bad because the thanks, Josh, barely came through at all. But at least we got to hear Tucker admit to soiling himself in exchange for our hospitality. Look, man, sometimes that happens. I talk to Tucker almost every day. And frequently, it's a phone-to-phone conversation. That's fine. We figured out the phone thing back here on the radio side. I think that was fine. And somewhere in there, Tucker's in a new house. I don't know that he's done radio from inside this new house before. Maybe he did it from the wine cellar / bomb shelter that I explicitly asked him not to do the show from tonight. This show has really, this is the third edition of the humbly named the Josh Briscoe Show. I feel like now we've arrived. I feel like now we have suffered through a phone problem and a phone connection. We've paid that price. We can take a break. And you know the good news? I'm going to have so much time to blab from here on out. There are going to be takes I didn't think I was going to even get to give today that I'll be able to provide to you throughout the remainder of the show. Just don't soil yourself in exchange for hospitality here on the Josh Briscoe Show. It's the Josh Briscoe Show here on 96.5 The Fan. Quentin Morris on the other side of the glass. I've already forgotten what I said I was going to open this segment with. I don't remember if it was... I've already forgotten. I'm going to get to Patrick Mahomes in a second. That was the thing from earlier that I went, oh yeah, what else did I not really... Oh, this was all my fault. That was it. This entire... What you've heard over the last 15 minutes or so, or closer to 30, I guess now. We're at 8:30. It was going to be fine. I told Quentin in the break, I said, you know, the first couple of shows... First couple of Josh Briscoe shows and first times, like, you know, really getting back on the horse and trying to make sure I got everything I want to get through 2 hours. I had so much stuff prepped, and I'll always take ridiculous notes during Chiefs games so I can go back and check anything. And I'm on social media all the time, and I'm writing about the Chiefs all the time on ChiefsOnSI.com, by the way, which I never mention here. And I probably should. ChiefsOnSI.com, me and Jordan Foote, who was our guest last week, we're the leads there on SI.com's Chiefs coverage, ChiefsOnSI.com. So I'm aware of everything that's going on, and by and large, also, I'm a born and raised yapper. I am the son of a couple of yappers who are the descendants of two more yappers, et cetera, et cetera. I have a long familial line of people who can talk to anybody for any length of time. That is my genetic gift. I can't dunk. I don't have abs. I have diabetes, and I can listen to myself talk for a long time.
Can I give a silver lining?
Yeah, please. Yes! Good work, Quentin!
We have that.
That makes it all worth it. And so what I confided during the break was that I have plenty of things to talk about here today, but it's just, it's not as extensive and it's not as well organized as it was the first couple of shows. And that's when Quentin said, oh, this is your fault. You tempted the radio gods and they are punishing you. And damn it, he's right. Because of all of the things that I have in my notes and the things I wanted to start with and the AARP three-peat and the cornerback situation and the panic being kind of weird to me and Mahomes on third down and talking to Tucker about Taylor Swift. The thing I didn't have amongst my headlines is a true, honest statement of where I was at pretty close to 24 hours ago, 23 hours ago now maybe, I guess, depending on, yeah, 20, let's call it 23 hours ago. Roughly 23 hours ago, I thought Patrick Mahomes was done. Not playing football or for the season. But as Patrick Mahomes went down while throwing a touchdown pass, the Mahomesiest way to get injured. Mahomes jumps, shovels a touchdown to Samaje Perine, lands, crumples. I never thought knee for whatever reason. I don't know if he grabbed at his ankle when he was down, if I saw that on the broadcast, or if I just saw the way the ankle kind of buckled or whatever a little bit. But the reason I thought he was done, if I had to bet, like, you know, what was my subconscious telling me? There was one thing that Patrick Mahomes did not do immediately after getting hurt that was an enormous red flag to me. He didn't really fight it. Now, after the game, he said that the coaching staff was telling him and the training staff was telling him, like, stay there, stay down. And then they got over and help him up and start to walk him off the field. And then he's able to start putting some weight back on that and then figuring out just rolled his ankle. A freshly rolled ankle, re-rolled, but not the high ankle sprain that he suffered in Jacksonville in the 2022 season, January 2023, I believe. When Chad Henne threw one of those 14 completions to one of those touchdowns, in fact, of the 14 completions to Travis Kelce in that game, the playoff game against the Jags. But when he went down in that moment, and for whatever reason, like some of the tight close-up shots, Mahomes looked calm in a way that, for whatever reason for me, I'm just curious if anyone else experienced it this way, sort of triggered as like acceptance almost of like, oh no, this is bad. There was no benefit to him in that moment trying to tough it out and get to the sideline. Now again, if he hadn't just thrown a touchdown, if the Chiefs hadn't just scored there, maybe he would have tried to fight his way back to the huddle and done the whole Iron Man thing. But he does that every time, it feels like, when there is a Mahomes moment of injury concern. It feels like the first thing that he's going to do is try to walk it off, grit it out, etc. Now, again, he had just thrown the touchdown, so I think it gave him that freedom to perhaps not just have to hulk out through it. But in that moment, and for a mercifully relatively brief moment until we started seeing the tweets that he was jogging on the sideline after he got out of the tent, for that moment, I thought we were about to see Carson Wentz finish that game. And if that was all it was, I would have taken it, because it would have meant Mahomes is back again soon. It's kind of a funny thing about this season that has been so underscored by injuries. I'm going to knock on wood real quick. Right, here we go. Okay. Knocked on wood. That Patrick Mahomes hadn't had one of those lower leg injuries. He's had foot and ankle and toe and high ankle, just kind of tacking on those injuries from over the years. And then he finally, again, tweaks it once, tweaks it again, and it looks worse on the in the instance from last night. But for just a little bit, I really thought that was whatever it was that came over Mahomes in that moment to seem so calm and sort of accepting, or maybe it, to me, again, and obviously not the case, but it looked like he knew it was worse than usual, because it wasn't an immediate get up, hobble it off, grit your teeth, try to hobble to the huddle and all of that. So am I alone, Quentin? What was your level of panic? I mean, several people have said it's the quietest they've ever heard Arrowhead was in that moment last night. Did I get ahead of myself just immediately fearing for the worst? Does that say a lot about me as an anxious person? I don't know.
No, I think you're, as a Chiefs fan, you know, I think it is very real because you saw him go down. And, you know, I'll say this. I think there was a little bit of hope even before we came back from, like, the commercial, the injury timeout, because he didn't seem angry.
Good point.
You know,
that's
like,
a good point.
When he was really angry about the rolled or the high ankle sprain.
Mm-hmm.
He was really angry about the knee when it was, you know,
I didn't even mention the knee locking out of place.
Yeah,
yes,
like,
correct.
He was really angry when those things happened. This time, it just seemed like he was more confused than anything.
Yeah.
Like what the hell just happened? So,
I threw a touchdown and hurt myself. What happened here?
And it was a dead leg type deal. It was a really weird situation. And I felt better, obviously, when he's running on the sideline. But what really made me feel good about this is what Andy Reid said during his press conference after the game was over. When you hear that, that made me, okay, like, you know, he'll get it worked on and then we'll see what it is moving forward. But hearing that, I took a big relief because he was like, no, I want to go back in. We're good. Let's do this.
And then even Mahomes talking about it after in his presser, good audio clip pull. I'll come prepared with audio next time if necessary. If you're going to bring this level of production to this show, making me look bad. But later, because I think it may have been, I don't remember who asked, but one of the reporters asked Andy, like, did it seem like a similar deal to that Jags injury? And he's like, I don't really know. I'll let you know on Monday or Tuesday, I guess. And he didn't talk today, so it'll be Wednesday anyway. When Mahomes was asked about it after, he was like, hey, does this feel familiar to that high ankle sprain you suffered in Jacksonville? He said, no, not really, because that was a high ankle thing. It was more about how he was brought down. This was just a weird plant and a weird landing and a little buckle and a roll. And that, to me, also kind of going back to the theme of recurring injuries that Mahomes, not even really recurring injuries, just the lower leg, knees on down sort of injuries that he perpetually has played through. You had the belief at that point. I had the belief at that point, hearing Mahomes talk about it, that this isn't going to be something that necessarily hampers his play for weeks to come. Quentin, a well-prepared man, has the audio. Here's what Patrick Mahomes said when he was asked if it felt similar to that Jacksonville injury. Maybe the weird thing that I saw from Mahomes in that second, maybe it was fear. You say it was kind of scary, kind of afraid in that moment. It's a scary feeling. Maybe he was afraid for a second, and that is what registered with me as something horrifying beyond words.
Well, and I think, you know, just because what we've seen from quarterbacks, especially last year, right? We had two, I don't want to call them stars, but we had two higher-end quarterbacks go down with Achilles injuries.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what it looks like when you tear your Achilles. Or I guess even this year, right, with Deshaun Watson.
Yep.
It was a very similar non-contact. And you notice that, what did the camera do when they showed the replay of it? They focused on the ankle, you know, the back part of the ankle. And I think that was my biggest fear, is like, oh, did we just see him rupture his Achilles? Because that seems to be that non-contact injuries for quarterbacks, you know, especially guys that are standing in the pocket. Whereas, you know, when we see non-contact for other players like running backs, wide receivers, we're worried about the knee. And it just seems like quarterbacks, we aren't necessarily worried about the knee, it's that Achilles, because we've seen three quarterbacks do it over the last calendar year.
And it really does feel like a horror movie monster in some way, like one of the more recent ones where the monster is like, you know, sin or whatever, sort of an ethereal threat. The Achilles, like you mentioned, it's Cousins and Rodgers. This year it's Watson. And of course, we've seen it plenty in Kansas City for non-quarterbacks as well. Derek Johnson and Eric Berry and many others. But that, it feels like such a random thing that it becomes terrifying. And honestly, you can go back to what Andy said in that first clip you played about the loosest ankles in America. There seems to be something there with Mahomes, and we've seen it with his ankle and his foot bending both directions in and out, and going back to that high ankle. I'm trying to remember the things we learned about the exterior rotation of an ankle versus an interior rotation of an ankle, and a basketball sprain versus a high ankle sprain, and all of that. It's stuff Mahomes trains on, that he and his personal trainer spend time making him the most flexible giving him the most flexible ankles in America. And if that's something that becomes a legitimate advantage of his, it's not, it probably won't be something that's in his eventual football life documentary, right? I don't think he's going to get 10 minutes on why did you never lose significant time to these ankle sprains, right? Because it's something you don't really think about until you're missing the time. I also just sort of always live, knock on wood again, in a little bit of a sense of fear that maybe one of the only thing that would stop Mahomes at this point is a freak serious injury. The freak unserious injuries he overcomes with remarkable frequency in the fact that his kneecap had to be on the side of his leg to actually sideline him for a significant period of time, and they won the Super Bowl that year.
Yeah, I think it was Dick Vermeil that said you can't make the club from the tub.
Yeah.
You know, it's just one of those things. It doesn't matter how good you are. If you can't make it on the field, then it doesn't matter. And I think Patrick Mahomes has sort of taken that sort of ideology to heart, where it's like, I need to make sure that I'm ready to go every single week. And it's why, you know, even though he's kind of he's not afraid to run with the ball. Mm-hmm. He's always smart about how he does it, right? He's always sliding, stepping out of bounds. And I think because he knows that he isn't worth anything to the team if he can't be on the field.
This is a little bit sarcastic and a little bit serious, but it's good to take a minute to remember how bleeping good Patrick Mahomes is, both in explainable and inexplicable ways, because he's one of one. He is an alien quarterbacking a football team. And the number of unique ways that he stands out is just mind-boggling. It really is. And that's what we here on the Josh Briscoe Show can provide for you. Patrick Mahomes, really, really good. One segment left in tonight's edition of the Josh Briscoe Show here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports. I'm Josh Briscoe. We've talked about the defensive ups and downs a little bit here, and we've talked about the cornerback conversation a lot, which I feel like has gotten a little bit strange recently. Just one quick little kind of button to put on the defensive discourse here. The Chiefs gave up 24 points to the Buccaneers, and there's like a weird energy that they just have absolutely been found out as a fraud defensively, and I don't think we need to be in that space just yet. We mentioned Joshua Uche a little bit earlier. He barely got involved, and you'll see him continue to get into the rhythm and try to improve this pass rush a little bit. The Chiefs have had their issues getting pressure with four this year. I think that's part of the reason they acquired Uche. Obviously, Chris Jones is an animal, but when you have him demanding so much attention, who else is going to take advantage of those matchups? That's great. The weird thing for me from this game mostly came early on when the defense did, you know, allow some points. First drive, the Chiefs, it's five plays and the Bucs punt, and that's when Hardman has the nice return and then gets injured on the tackle. The drive after that ended up being a long Buccaneers touchdown drive that was it ended on third and six. It was a coverage sack, I think, by and large. But George Karlaftis gets to Baker Mayfield, brings him down, and they called defensive holding on Shamari Connor. It wasn't actually on him. It was on Trent McDuffie. It was not a hold for Trent McDuffie. Probably could have been a hold on Shepard. Worst case scenario, there's a no call there, and the Chiefs get the ball back instead. The Bucs move the football down the field, end up scoring. They take that early lead. The next drive, three and out to get the ball back after the Chiefs have the lead again. And then Travis Kelce gives the football back on the Chiefs' next offensive drive. The Chiefs' defense gets the ball back again. You get to the half after the Chiefs have the ball right at the end there. Until the first drive out of the half, which starts at the 49 because of the opening kick return. At the 49, they convert a third and short. Joshua Williams' horse collar gives him an extra 15. All of a sudden, at the 22-yard line. Eventually, they score. Otten gets a touchdown versus Justin Reed. It was a schemed-up play where the motion really seemed to get the matchup there. Reed kind of closes on Otten. Otten keeps trucking downfield. Touchdown appears down there. The point at that moment for me, the Chiefs
go three and out, give the ball back. The Bucks end up going down and ending with the field goal there. The confusing thing about that turn of events is that it wasn't some disastrous meltdown from the Chiefs' defense. It was, by and large, a great effort, one that was extended by a bad penalty. I'm not here whining about the refs or the record. This isn't like, well, the ref scored 7 of the points. I'm just saying that was a drive that, if refereed correctly, would have ended there. It didn't. And then so they continued driving down the field and they gave it up. The Chiefs defense had plenty of chances to stop it from there. But they did get one stop with a sack on 3rd and 6 and a phantom call. And then the Bucs didn't do anything else in the first half. First drive out of the half, short field. They are able to, not a super short field, again, halfway down before the defense even takes the field. That's not an unwinnable circumstance for the Chiefs, but it's not an ideal one for an opposing for your defense. Obviously, the touchdown drive at the end of the game when the Bucs should have gone for 2 and tried to win it there, that is not ideal. That is not what you want. That's off to the side for me. The 17 points that came before that were not indicative of some like defensive meltdown. And I think it'll be interesting to go back through the last drive there and to kind of nitpick and see exactly what's going on. But maybe it's picking on Chris Roland Wallace in his, you know, very, very, very beginning of his NFL career. Baker was able to scramble a little bit and keep it moving. Not ideal. I'm with you. There was just, and again, maybe I'm in the wrong sections of Chiefs Twitter at this point. There was a lot of weeping and gnashing of teeth regarding a touchdown drive that was aided by a bad penalty and then a shutout the rest of the half. And then a touchdown to open on the short drive in the second half and then nothing else until later on. They end up, of course, they get the field goal a few drives later, or the next drive, and then several drives later, touchdown to tie it at the end. Maybe it would have felt different if they would have gone for 2, and then you either get to say, oh, the Chiefs have a goal line stop on the 2-point conversion, or they fold at the end, then you can put this back on the defense. Even then, I think the offense had more miscues in that game that ended up costing the team points than the defense did. This does not shake my confidence in the unit as a whole. If you missed the cornerback conversation, you can check that out on the podcast page, and I'm sure we'll continue to discuss the cornerback group as we go on. But it was all much, much closer to weird, fluky moments and bad positions for the defense than it was to anything that truly shakes my confidence in what the Chiefs defense can do. It's a great game from Liam Cohen, the offensive coordinator. It was a really nice game, by and large, for Baker, even though the stat line was not terribly impressive. It was a great game for Cade Otton. Maybe there's some schematic stuff there for those sort of McVay spinoff offenses that Spags can revisit a little bit. I'm just not looking at that as anything resembling the end of the facade for this fake elite Chiefs defense. I'm totally comfortable with the effort they put out there, considering that they are shorthanded at corner, even though I think they're going to be okay at that position. The big thing, Patrick Mahomes is healthy and still Patrick Mahomes. DeAndre Hopkins appears to still be, from early reports, still DeAndre Hopkins. And the reports of Travis Kelce's demise may have been greatly exaggerated. The rumors of this show's demise earlier this hour, greatly exaggerated, because we made it all the way to 9 o'clock. Hope you've had a good evening so far tonight, Kansas City. Hope you've enjoyed looking back at the positives from what this team produced last night and the fact that they do still have room to grow. That's actually kind of encouraging. I'm Joshua Briscoe. For Quentin Moore's on the other side of the glass, this has been the Josh Briscoe Show on 96.5 The Fan.
Hey, y'all. Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze.
Grab your favorite thong because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.